This is The Guardian.
Today, the Pandora Papers lead us to a major Conservative Party donor and a massive bribe.
Prime Minister, what do you hope for this week?
This is only half a conference.
If you walk through the Conservative Party conference this week in Manchester, you'll see government ministers striding around, trailed by party members, advisers, and lobbyists. Everyone looking for influence. And it's all happening in the glare of the media, out in the open. But this isn't where you get the real access to ministers. The kind that happens behind closed doors, in meetings you rarely hear about, with names you might not recognise. Some of the people who get these meetings are huge donors. The Conservative Party needs their money to fight and win elections. But does the party always know exactly where that money comes from?
Prime Minister, are you taking dodgy money? Prime Minister, where are your donations coming from?
Today, the story of one of the party's most generous benefactors, an international dealmaker called Mohamed Amirsi. His donations to Boris Johnson's leadership campaign helped put the PM in number 10. His fortune, it turns out, may have been built in part on his involvement in deals linked to alleged bribes and corruption. Amirsi strongly denies any wrongdoing. This is a journey to the heart of UK politics via Sweden, Central Asia, and the British Virgin Islands. It involves a whistleblower, a dictator's daughter, and some very bad pop music. How dare. And it's leading to uncomfortable questions for the Conservatives as they meet in Manchester. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in focus, the Pandora Papers, following the money to the top of the Tory party. Harry Davies is an investigative reporter for The Guardian.
Still have to effectively kind of squeeze this data.
He's polite and soft-spoken. It can make him easy to underestimate, which is a great quality for a journalist, especially one as obsessive about detail and well-prepared as Harry, who literally gets around with an encrypted pen drive attached to his belt. All of this is why he was one of the first reporters assigned to this investigation.
Fairly something quite compelling about, you know, access to these documents. But the thing,
and he spent months on it, combing through thousands of documents, emails, invoices, confidential reports, meeting multiple well-placed sources. Obviously, we can't cover every lead he chased, everyone he met. We can only cover a few of the steps he took along the way. Here's where he started. He took the names of the UK's top political donors and searched for them in the Pandora Papers, the largest ever leak of offshore data, 11.9 million files. And he got a match. Someone called Mohamed Amirsi. He kept digging.
And sure enough, I started finding his name on paperwork for various offshore companies, companies in the British Virgin Islands and companies in Cyprus.
Amirsi was a mystery to Harry, but not to everyone involved in this project.
Started hearing back from our partners in Sweden who were saying, actually, we've heard of this guy. We know who this person is.
They knew who he was because Amirsi's name had come up in connection to an investigation into this huge Swedish telecoms company, Telia, which had been prosecuted for doing corrupt deals in Uzbekistan. Harry started looking into that investigation.
So I started going through these thousands of pages of documents. I saw this invoice that was from a company called Emergent Telecom Ventures. I was like, wait a minute, I know I've seen the name of that company before. I went back to the Pandora Papers, and sure enough, yes, it's one of the same companies we could see in the Pandora Papers that Mohammed Mursi was described as the ultimate beneficiary of.
So this Swedish company, implicated in corruption, had paid an invoice to an offshore company. According to the Pandora Papers, that was Mohammed Mursi's company.
So at this point, I want to know, why is Telia, this big Swedish telecoms company, why is it paying this British Virgin Islands company that we can see the Pandora Papers, controlled and owned by Mohammed Mursi, why is Telia paying this company $500,000 as a success fee for a 2010 deal relating to Uzbekistan?
A success fee for his part in a deal made in 2010. Within a few years, US prosecutors and Telia would both accept that that deal was corrupt. In 2013, Mursi and Telia parted ways. In the 6 years he worked for the company, he appeared to have been paid about $65 million. At this point, he's barely known in the UK, but that was about to change.
Thank you above all, Teresa. Thank you on behalf of the college, and thank you on behalf of the university, your university.
In 2017, Mursi began to donate to the Conservative Party. Him and his partner gave a lot of money, around £750,000 over 4 years. And that bought him access, lunches with government ministers. He backed Theresa May in 2018, and a year later, she came to speak at the opening of Oxford University's new Mohammed Mursi Lecture Theatre.
But of course, today we're here to give our thanks to Mohammed Mursi and the Mursi Foundation for financing the amazing refurbishment and provision of this lecture room.
There he is, short grey hair, spectacles, standing at his lectern in an academic's gown, which he's wearing over a two-piece suit, looking perfectly at ease in a room with his name on it, and in the company of a former prime minister.
Begin by learning how to make money, then how to hang on to it, and then finally how to give it away.
When the Tories needed a new leader in 2019, Mursi backed all the favourites, giving money to the campaigns of candidates including Jeremy Hunt, Michael Gove, and the winner, Boris Johnson. He didn't just donate to politicians. Mursi also had lunch with Prince Charles, and after, donated hundreds of thousands of pounds for the restoration of one of the prince's houses. And he was fond of giving lectures too.
I'm not a social scientist, but an entrepreneur and a philanthropist. So what I'm about to say...
One of his favourite topics, ending corruption.
Corruption is a very, very heinous crime.
So what about that Swedish company, Telia, the one Mursi worked for? The one that was accused of corruption. Before we go any further, I'll say that Mursi has denied involvement in any corruption. And we're going to give you more detail on what he said about those allegations in a few minutes. But the story, in brief, is this. Telia wanted a slice of the telecoms market in Uzbekistan. But this wasn't Scandinavia. To do so, they had to pay a bribe to the daughter of the president at the time. The daughter's name? Gulnara Karimova, and she's a very interesting character.
Not only was she a diplomat, a fashion designer, businesswoman, she was also a pop singer as well. I think she famously sang a duet with Gerard Depardieu.
Excuse-moi pour tout ce que je n'ai pu te dire.
As well as being a pop star, she was also extremely influential in Uzbekistan. If you wanted to do business in Uzbekistan, you effectively had to go through her.
And Telia did. They paid her a series of bribes worth more than $300 million, starting in 2007 and continuing for the years after. This wasn't a bit of cash under the table. The bribe was a hugely complex financial transaction using offshore structures. But eventually, and we're skipping a few steps here, US investigators caught on. After this whole scandal was unearthed in 2012, Telia appointed new management to come in and clean house. They also brought in a new international law firm to investigate the company's activities across Central Asia.
the chair of Telia, who'd come in to sort of tidy up, and she gave the speech, and she said to the shareholders at the annual general meeting that the law firm had discovered a quite alarming pattern of what they described as sort of unethical business activities in these countries, some of which they said they couldn't rule out as being criminal.
Kära aktieägare, I mitt tal till er förra året...
We see this speech at the very bottom that says, you know, we have terminated agreements with an external advisor. This external advisor does not have a name, but it says that the advisor had worked for the company since 2007 and that had worked closely with the former management of Telia regarding certain transactions in Central Asia.
Telekommunikation är själva livsnerven för det moderna samhället.
That posed two questions, really. One, which is who, you know, who is this advisor? And two, how can we get a hold of this report? When we eventually managed to see certain extracts of this report, we saw that this particular advisor was referred to by the lawyers as Mr. XY.
In all of this, you can see the outlines of a mystery person. Telia chair calls him an unnamed advisor. The law firm's investigation refers to him as Mr. XY. Who was he? Harry spoke to multiple sources. But to find someone who would speak on tape, he had to go to Sweden.
Thank you for waiting. We now have to call for groups 1, 2, 3.
He met the whistleblower, and she was a big deal.
I mean, actually, why don't you just tell me about your career up until the point at which you arrived at Telia?
So, poor you.
No, go on.
So,
Michaela Ahlberg was the former head of ethics and compliance at Telia, hired in 2014 to clean up after the company's scandals in Central Asia.
My BBC colleagues were doing an on-camera interview as well, and they were setting up the camera equipment, and suddenly this woman sort of walked into the room, and within a couple of minutes she was already talking to us about Telia and Mohammed and Mercy and started drawing things on a flip chart.
Wow, she was literally sketching this out for you?
Yeah, she's just taken a pen out of my hand and she's sort of suddenly drawing.
And what did she tell you?
She told us quite a lot. Firstly, she was able to confirm to us that Mr. XY is Mohammed Amasi.
Sure you'll say. So in this report, it says we relied very much on the services of Mr. XY. Who is Mr. XY?
That is Mohammed Amasi.
She told us that the unnamed advisor that had been identified in that speech, who Telia terminated and ceased working with, was Mohammed Amasi.
So this external advisor whose contract was terminated, who is that referring to?
That is Mohammed Amasi.
And she was able to tell us a little more about what Telia knew and what Telia discovered when they started investigating its business activities in Central Asia.
Yeah, she talked about red flags, right? I mean, what were some of those red flags?
She spoke about a series of red flags which had been identified by the outside law firm. One of those red flags was the fact that Telia was paying him tens of millions of pounds in fees. And the suspicion, as she explained it, was this money may have been used to make improper payments to other people.
Is that why Mr. Amasi was sacked? There was just too much of this around. There were too many red flags.
Yeah. Red flags.
The red flags were so many.
The law firm's investigation, the one that talked about Mr. XY, had listed a bunch of these kinds of worrying things. It said its findings weren't final, but it alleged that some of the $65 million that was paid to Amasi may have been used to improperly acquire regulatory benefits. In other words, bribes. So Harry, at this point, you've seen this law firm's report, you've got a whistleblower. What are you left thinking?
What started as a search for political donors in the Pandora Papers, it was now looking more serious. One of the Conservative Party's, you know, big donors, influential donor, appeared to be involved in helping to structure what was later accepted to be a multi-million dollar bribe to the daughter of a dictator. There was also information that we had now, which pointed to his wider involvement in Telia's business deals in Central Asia.
But there was something still missing from Harry's investigation, which was an explanation from Mohammed Amasi himself. Coming up, Harry calls Amasi.
Hello?
Mohammed, it's Harry Davis here. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Yes, very well indeed, very well.
I'm sorry, I was...
You know, I'd sort of been anticipating talking to him at some point for months, and had sort of, in some respects, been preparing myself to have that kind of quite, you know, difficult conversation with him.
I have some questions for you, which...
Sure. And I also have one or two observations for you as well, but okay. Why don't you start first?
In the course of this call, Harry, you put some key claims to Amersi. How did he respond to those key parts of your story?
So I asked him about his role in this Uzbekistan deal in 2010, and he said that his sole involvement was effectively to sort of validate the valuation of a company that sort of underpinned the deal.
Yes.
Were you involved? I'm asking you, were
no,
you involved?
I was involved on one very small part. So the deal was struck in 2007 when I was not part of the advisory board or advisory team. Mm. It was already done there. And so I did some valuation work in one of the many transactions that took place under that.
I said to him, so are you telling me that your role was insignificant and minimal? And he said, yes.
Is what you're saying, that your role was insignificant or minimal in that deal?
Yes.
I asked him if he was the advisor that Talia fired. He said no. He said, I have no idea who they meant.
Do you know who that advisor was?
No, but there were so many of those. All across the platform, all across the portfolio.
Was that advisor you, Mohammed Amersi?
No, I have no idea. No, nobody mentioned that to me.
Amersi wasn't very happy that I'd called him. He called it an ambush, and afterwards his lawyers sent me a very long letter clarifying his position. They accepted he was, in fact, involved in advising on the terms and structure of the deal, and that he had drafted an email to the individual alleged to be Karimova's representative.
Like Harry said, it was a long response, but they wanted to make clear. Amersi says he had no reason to suspect the intermediary he was dealing with was linked to the daughter of Uzbekistan's then president. They said the work Amersi did on the project was limited in time and scope, and finally, that the transaction related to terms put in place 2 years earlier, before he had any involvement, and that he relied on the fact due diligence on the deal had been done by Telia and its advisors. Paul Lewis, you're Harry's editor and the head of investigations at The Guardian. What does this story tell us about the UK's system of political donations?
I think Harry's work on the Amersi story, which was done in conjunction with BBC Panorama, is really significant. It raises important questions for Amersi. It raises important questions for the Conservative Party. And indeed, it raises important questions about politics and money and transparency in our country. Estate agents and lawyers and other commercial entities in the UK have to, by law, go through certain due diligence processes to know their clients, particularly when there is red flags suggesting they require enhanced scrutiny. But if a party in the UK wants to receive large donations, it's under no legal requirement to perform enhanced due diligence to look into the source of the funds or to do further examination about the person that's making the donations. One of the things I think not just the Conservative Party, but all political parties in the UK will be asking themselves this week is, do they know enough about their donors? Are the systems in place to make sure that the money that bankrolls our parties is clean enough?
Mr. Eustace, I'm from The Guardian. Just wondering whether you got any response to the allegations Mohammed Amersi, a major Tory donor, may have benefited from a corrupt deal overseas.
Well, I'm not aware of that story, I'm afraid, so...
Have you not seen the papers or listened to the Today programme this morning?
No, not this morning, no.
Is it the sort of thing that you're bothered about, the sort of people who are donating to the Conservatives at the moment?
Look, we've got rules around donations.
You know, the Amersi story is actually just one of several stories we're running this week about Conservative Party political donors and indeed senior figures in the party, one of them very senior, whose financial affairs have been exposed by the Pandora Papers. So I think, given the party's meeting this week in Manchester for its conference, it's going to be a significant moment. You know, we often talk about political donations in the abstract, but we need to ask ourselves, why do people, businessmen in particular, donate such large sums of money to the ruling parties? Sometimes they donate to both parties. Now, they will often say that they are legally entitled to make donations and they have political preferences and they can support whoever they do. But there is also here a question of both access and influence. These donations don't just happen in a vacuum. They buy you access.
In response to this story, Immersi's lawyers also added that in Central Asia, they strongly rejected any suggestion of misconduct, saying any allegations that their client had made, quote, improper or illegal payments, or was a conduit to help Telia improperly acquire regulatory benefits, were false. Immersi's lawyers told The Guardian he had never been told that Mr. XY might have been him and had no reason to believe the allegations in the report referred to him, as no allegations of misconduct had ever been put to him. They confirmed he had received approximately $65 million in fees, which they said were commensurate with industry standards. They added Immersi's termination by Telia was a, quote, mutual friendly departure. They said Immersi had never faced any allegations of misconduct or criminality, despite exhaustive investigations into Telia's activities by law enforcement bodies in four countries. They added that despite an unsuccessful attempt by Swedish prosecutors to bring charges against three former Telia executives in 2019 and investigations in three other countries, no criminal or other legal action has been brought against Immersi. Immersi's lawyers said all his donations were derived from work done for legitimate clients and any suggestion that they were the product of improper funds was false. In a statement, Telia declined to comment on Immersi's work for the company. It said that since 2013, Telia had, quote, committed itself to transparency and openness and exited all Central Asian countries where the company had operated. The company added it had accepted responsibility for violations of anti-corruption laws. In response to our reporting, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said on Monday, quote, all these donations are vetted in the normal way, in accordance with rules that were set up under a Labour government. So we vet them the whole time. That is it for today. My thanks to Harry Davies, Paul Lewis and Jim Waterson, The Guardian's media editor. He was the one shouting questions to Tory politicians earlier in the episode. The Pandora Papers were reported by a huge Guardian team, including Simon Goodley, Harry Davies, Luke Harding, Juliet Garside, David Conn, David Pegg, Paul Lewis, Kaylin Barr, Rowena Mason and Pamela Duncan in London. Ben Butler and Anne Davies in Sydney. Dominic Rush in New York. Andrew Roth in Moscow. Helena Smith in Athens. Robert Tate in Prague and me, Michael Safi, in Beirut. Investigations like the Pandora Papers project take a huge amount of time, effort and expense. And by supporting us, you can help us keep vital reporting like this open and free for everyone. Think of it as an investment in exposing the next investigation we do into the secrets that the rich and powerful would rather keep hidden. You can support us by going to theguardian.com/support investigations. We'll link to it from our podcast page. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design and original music was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard, Nicole Jackson and Archie Bland. We're back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.